From the University of Texas at Austin, KUT Radio, this is In Black America.
My wife says to my son, Daddy's there. And he says to her, why? And her answer to him was, oh, let him tell you when he comes home. And so when I came home a couple of days later, like always, he never forgets anything. So right. His first question to me was, why were you in Baltimore? And I said, oh, I was meeting. And he says, no, why were you there where all of those police were? And what I realized, John, at that point was, I had an answer for you. Like, if you ask me that question, I can explain to you while I was there. But what I realized at that moment was that I did not have a six-year-old answer, and that my six-year-old deserved an answer, primarily because when I was growing up in New York City, I was born in 1961. Around my son's same age was when Dr. King was assassinated. Now, I don't remember exactly what was going on in New York City and Brooklyn at the time of King's assassination, but I knew something was going on.
Kenny Brianswell, Executive Director of Fathers Incorporated and author of Daddy, There's a Noise Outside. Brianswell is no stranger to finding ways to help his community address sensitive subjects. His professional career is currently grounded in running his 11-year-old not-for-profit in an effort to build the capacity of fathers to build stronger families. Fast forward, thousands of articles, 3 books, and 2 documentaries later, Brianswell has turned his attention to children's literature. Brianswell's newest venture, Daddy, There's a Noise Outside, takes the complex issue of protesters and breaks the conversation down so the first grader can understand. According to Brianswell, the idea came when his 6-year-old son asked his wife why he was in Baltimore on the day that the indictments were issued on the 6th police officer in the Freddie Gray case. To which she said to him, wait till your father come home and ask him. That explanation transformed into a 24-page children's book focused on helping first through third graders understand the nuances of protest. I'm Johnny L. Hansen, Jr., and welcome to another edition of In Black America. On this week's program, Daddy, There's a Noise Outside, with Kenny Brianswell, Executive Director of Fathers, Inc., In Black America.
No one talked to them at young ages about what was taking place in our communities. And as parents, we make the assumption that our kids are not paying attention to what's going on.
Right.
And so David said to me, you know what, Kenny, and I was telling him the story. He says, you need to write that. He says, you need to write that up in a book. And so I started playing around and jotting down some ideas. And I literally wrote that book on a plane ride from L.A. to Atlanta. That children's book. I wrote the entire book in that 5-hour plane ride from L.A. to Atlanta. And basically what I did was what I did with my son, which I wasn't trying to explain to him the Freddie Gray case, nor was I trying to explain to him Black Lives Matter. What I wanted him to understand was, what does protest mean?
In Daddy, There's a Noise Outside, the story begins when 2 children are awakened by noise in the middle of the night outside the window of their inner city neighborhood. Both their mom and dad spend the next morning explaining to them what was taking place in their community. Born and raised in Brooklyn, New York, Brianswell is the father of 4 children. He was the director of the New York State Fatherhood Initiative, where he managed over $11 million in programs. For more than 24 years of community development experience, Brianswell is the executive director of Fathers Incorporated, a not-for-profit organization that serves as a leader in the promotion of responsible fatherhood and mentoring. Additionally, Brianswell served as the director of the National Responsible Fatherhood Clearinghouse. The NRFC is a widely recognized resource for fathers, practitioners, researchers, and policymakers. Early in his career, Brianswell was a radio broadcaster for 15 years and a community newspaper publisher for 10. Recently, In Black America spoke with Kenny Brianswell.
I went to Albany Business College, and I went to SUNY and did a lot of hopping around colleges, as we do. But I was also, at the time, working for the state of New York as a computer analyst. And so while I was there, dabbled in publishing newspapers. I was a radio DJ for 15 years. I was doing community work. I was doing marketing and organizational planning and everything that I could get my hands into. And in 2004, after a bad relationship, found myself sitting on a couch contemplating taking my life. And so while I was sitting on a couch, really just kind of prayed to my God, the only thing that I knew to do at that time, And he just basically said to me, speak to the hearts of men. And I got up off the couch that day, and I wrote a 15-page perspective on an organization called Fathers Incorporated, and that was in 2004. And so we decided at that point that I really wanted to do some work with fathers and really kind of help them through the custody and visitation and child support issues that we often go through. And so recently we have decided, after doing a number of different product development pieces, we've done a couple of documentaries, I've written a couple of books, we've done curriculums, to enter into this space of children's books. And so that's how we, that's a long way around getting to Daddy There's a Noise Outside.
Why, in your opinion, is it necessary to a point where these type of organizations in which you have fathers need some assistance in themselves, but also dealing with their families?
Well, you know, we don't. The service industry is not designed to serve men.
Heard
and
that.
So the service industry is designed to serve women and children.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it has been, it has always been a major, major mistake, and we say this to organizations around the country, if you are really serious about developing and strengthening families, then you have to be just as serious about developing men and fathers to play their role. And so you can't look at men just from the financial side of what you want from them. I mean, you got to provide services for them. Just like mothers didn't get a manual when children were born, neither
right.
did fathers. And I think all of those things that I learned as a result of publishing newspapers and being on the radio and DJing and all those things played into developing skills that I now use as a man. And I think that for men in particular, is we don't cultivate them in that way. We don't show them, and I know you hear this all the time. My uncle used to say this to me, every man has a hustle, and that hustle can be changed into a profession. White men understand that and understand that clearly. But for black men, we always make the hustle sound bad. And the hustle sounds bad because there's no structure around it. And so I think that, to your question, you know, one of our challenges with men is we don't talk to men as men.
I understand that when you say that, one of the persons that I interviewed, he's a politician, and he said, a dream without a plan is just an illusion.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I've heard it said another way. If you don't, I think the term was, if you don't plan, then you plan to fail. Or if you fail to plan, you plan to fail.
Right.
And so you don't, if you, everything has to have a plan. And so even parenting, you have to have a plan. You know, we, in this workshop, this grant training that I'm in today, and we were kind of throwing around some numbers, and I had to jump in and say, whoa. Let me help you tease through these numbers so that you don't get a false sense of what our people look like in our community. Because oftentimes for black parents, we always hear that 73% of our babies are born into out-of-wedlock households.
Mm-hmm.
That is a marital status number. It does not denote parenting status.
Right.
And I always say to people, for every single mother, there's a single father, because it's a marital status. And so just because children are born out of wedlock doesn't mean that dads aren't in their lives. It just means that they're not married and they're not counted in the census.
Mm-hmm.
So the whole notion of father absence is not that black men are just running away in droves from their kids. The census doesn't paint a good picture for us because we get confused by the data points and how we use those terms. And I think in our community, for our politicians, for our media, and everybody, we got to start teasing these numbers apart, because it's not until you do that we can actually come up with a viable solution to the ills of our community.
No, that's right. When did you realize that you had what it took to make it on your own?
You know, I still struggle with that. I just was talking to somebody this morning about embracing your insecurities, right? Being able to say that you don't know it all, being able to say that you're scared, being able to say that you really don't know where you're going, that you actually know that you have a path and that you have to go somewhere, but you're not necessarily sure how you're going to get there. And I think that it happens gradually for me, and it always surprises me. It always surprises me in the fact that when I do something, or I show up somewhere, or I am somewhere, or I meet somebody, it's always a quiet celebration for me because it's like, wow, you know, I'm actually 2 weeks, 3 weeks ago, I'm speaking at the White House. And I had this moment, like right before I went up to the podium to start to speak about men's health, that I'm actually at the White House. This is this cat from like Brooklyn who ran the street with gangs and got in trouble and smoked weed and dropped out of high school and watched all my children and lied to my mother and all those kinds of things, and went into the military and came out and had a child out of wedlock and moved away and bounced around and got four kids by three baby mamas and all that kind of stuff. And I'm like, I am actually getting ready to speak at the White House, and not because someone was handing me a level of charity to do so, but it was because I had something to say and I was supposed to be there.
I understand. If you're just joining us, I'm Johnny O. Hanson Jr., and you're listening to In Black America from KUT Radio, and we're speaking with Kenny Braswell, Executive Director of Father Incorporated and author of Daddy, There's a Noise Outside. Mr. Braswell, when did you come to the realization that you needed to write this book, Daddy, There's a Noise Outside?
It was, as God brings me many things, it wasn't even something that was on my radar. through my work, a really good friend of mine, David Miller, who is in Washington, D.C., who has written a couple of children's books, him and I was in Baltimore around the same time that the Freddie Gray issues were going on, and we actually was in Baltimore the day that the indictments came down.
Mm-hmm.
And it just so happened that my wife and my son were at home in Atlanta watching it on CNN. I don't know if you remember that day, CNN.
Mm-hmm.
It was like a military state in Baltimore. It was something like I had never seen before in my life. And my wife says to my son, Daddy's there. And he says to her, why? And her answer to him was, oh, let him tell you when he comes home.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I came home a couple of days later, like always, he never forgets anything. So
right.
His question to me was, why were you in Baltimore? And I said, oh, I was meeting. And he says, no, why were you there where all of those police were? And what I realized, John, at that point was, I had an answer for you. Like, if you ask me that question, I can explain to you while I was there. But what I realized at that moment was that I did not have a six-year-old answer.
Right.
And that my six-year-old deserved an answer. Primarily because when I was growing up in New York City, I was born in 1961. Around my son's same age was when Dr. King was assassinated. Now, I don't remember exactly what was going on in New York City and Brooklyn at the time of King's assassination, but I knew something was going on. But no one ever told me what was happening in our community, so much so one day we actually had to evacuate our public school one day because the Panthers were on top of our school protesting someone that was murdered in the community in Crown Heights. I found that out later on in my life, but at the time, no one explained that to me. And I spoke to other people who grew up in L.A. and grew up in D.C. and Baltimore, Chicago, and other places. And they began to start recalling that no one talked to them at young ages about what was taking place in our communities. And as parents, we make the assumption that our kids are not paying attention to what's going on.
Right.
And so David said to me, you know what, Kenny, and I was telling him the story. He says, you need to write that. He says, you need to write that up in a book. And so I started playing around and jotting down some ideas, and I literally wrote that book on a plane ride from L.A. to Atlanta, that children's book. I wrote the entire book in that five-hour plane ride from L.A. to Atlanta. And basically what I did was what I did with my son, which I wasn't trying to explain to him the Freddie Gray case, nor was I trying to explain to him Black Lives Matter.
Right.
What I wanted him to understand was, what does protest mean? Why do we protest? Because that's a bigger part of the narrative of black folks in America than the Freddie Gray and the other things that happened. Because those things, Don, you know as well as I know, those things have always happened to
right.
us. These are just new names on the blackboard. Right? These things have been happening to us since we got to this country. And so the narrative is not trying to explain to him the nuances of what happened to a particular individual, but why are black people going through what black people are going through today, and how have we responded to that? And so in the book, it kind of, these kids wake up in the morning, or they wake up in the middle of the night because
right.
there's a noise outside. And the father comes in, and he says, go back to sleep. We'll talk in the morning. And the reason that I did that, opened up the book that way, because I wanted a father, my work is in fatherhood, so I wanted to show what that looks like when a father is in the house. And so a good friend of mine said to me one time that his son woke up with a nightmare one night, and he woke up screaming, and his wife turned over to him and said, Cameron is screaming. And John got up and he went in to the room to check on his son. He soothed him, spent some time with his son, and put his son back to sleep. Now, my good friend also grew up without his father in his life, and he said when he got back to his bed, he began to start thinking about, wow, what must it feel like to wake up in the middle of the night screaming and your father actually answers your scream? And so I thought about this book, and I said, I have to do the same thing. If these kids wake up in the middle of the night because of something they heard disturbing outside of the house, what a beautiful message to send to our community that their fathers are the first one to answer the call.
No, that's right. Why was it important for you to include the Martin Luther King March on Washington and his I Have a Dream speech, but also the Million Man March as part of the narrative?
Because I think that it's important to understand protest. You have to understand protest in its totality.
Gotcha.
That protest is not just ranting and raving in the streets and burning up cars and looting stores. That's an outcome of protest, but it's not exactly what protest is.
Mm-hmm.
And so some protest is quiet protest. Some protest is nonviolent protest. And in the book I talk about, you know, some protest is letter writing. Some protest
right.
is not eating. And I think at the end, we do this kind of small little kind of illustration where the father explains to the son, remember that time that you didn't do your homework and I took your toy
right.
and you folded your arm and went stomping off into the room. That is a form of protest. What that is you are engaging in an act based on how you feel about something that you either agree or disagree with. And so when you begin to start, and my son got it when
mm-hmm.
I said that, because he understood that. And he's like, okay, yeah. And so then my thing was, we do what black people do, is we give a serious message, but we also, we lighten it up a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And we also allow our kids to give it back to us so that we're clear that they understand it. And so when the son comes back and say, oh, I got it, is it all right if I protest going to school today? And what that says is he got it.
Right.
Is he got it. And then the father does, and all the mother does what mothers do. You know, how about I protest your allowance? That's the second iteration. Let's make sure now that you really, really got it. Oh, never mind. Y'all have a great day.
Right.
But if you look at the last frame of the book, it's probably one of the most talked about pieces in the book, particularly from adults. And so if you look at the last frame
mm-hmm.
of the book, the last frame of the book says, have a great day. Right? And the kids are going to the bus.
Right.
And around them, though, cars are burning,
exactly.
trash cans are turned over, things in the street. And someone said, Kenny, but have a great day. And I've been saying to them, you don't think that that is the narrative of our kids.
Right.
So that is their reality. And the child development piece around this, because I've been doing a lot of reading around child development, just really understanding them before I started to write these books,
mm-hmm.
but if it actually makes sense. When children are between, because these books are designed for children between grades 1 and 4.
Okay.
When our children are in those grades, is where they begin to start formulating their reality narrative around their environment. And at those ages, they don't have the ability to articulate dysfunction from
mm-hmm.
functional.
Right.
And so when they live in communities like that, and this is their narrative day in and day off, day in and day out, that becomes their reality. And so because it becomes their reality, it is then normalized for them. They think it's normal when it's not normal. And only an adult who's looking at that can say to themselves, that's not normal. But through a child's eye, this is all I know. And no one has ever told me that. I had a good friend tell me after reading the book, he says, Kenny, man, this made me think about so many things. He said it actually made me think about this particular incident in Baltimore. He lives in Baltimore, too,
mm-hmm.
where he taught his two-year-old to hit the floor when he heard gunshots.
Gotcha.
And he said one night some guns went off outside of his window, and he watched his two-year-old roll off the couch and hit the floor.
Mm-hmm.
And I said to myself, whoa. And he says, but I got to do that to keep him safe.
Right.
But my brain was telling me, now that is normalized for him. As a two-year-old, his brain is telling him that for some odd reason, this particular behavior and this action to do X is actually normal for me when that is not normal. So it was important for me to kind of walk through that continuum in the book, not only to help children understand the whole nuance of protest and what goes on in our community, but to also give parents the ability to be able to initiate the conversation, because part of it is that our parents don't even want to talk to our kids because they think our kids is too young. I don't know how old you are, but I know in my household growing up, kids were told one thing, be seen and not heard.
Well, I grew up in the 50s, so, you know, I got that song also.
You got that one. Kids be seen, not heard. Or the other one, don't get out of grown folks' business.
Exactly. Kenny, when you look at the book, it's not only a conversation you're having with your son, but your daughter's there also, and she's interacting in the conversation.
Absolutely, and she's curious.
Exactly.
Now, she's watching the conversation, you know, take place, you know, only because I'm in the fatherhood bill.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm really conscious about, you know, the imagery of fathers and the imagery of the relationship between dads and our sons. Did you see that so much emphasized in that
mm-hmm.
book? My goal is to actually write a series of books using the whole family. And in each of the books, introducing a new issue where it kind of focuses on a different character on the family. And not to jump too far ahead, but I've actually already finished the second book. The second book is called Daddy is Feeling Blue. And it's basically the father actually has a heart attack in a book. And when he has a heart attack, the mother then has to explain to the kids why and what happened to their father. And the children then have to go away and then figure out what can they do to encourage their father to be more conscious about his health.
Right.
Which is all of our narrative. And so men are conscious about our health when people who love us are
mm-hmm.
conscious about our health. And oftentimes we don't even engage in even caring about our health because no one ever stresses any care, you know, about
right.
our health.
Right.
Know about you. You know, the emergency room was my health plan for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I got hurt or got sick, I went to the emergency room. And so in this book, it really begins to talk about how children and families in particular have to be conscious about encouraging the men in their lives, particularly their fathers, to be conscious about their health. And so I want to tackle issues of grief. I want to tackle issues of domestic violence, of child abuse, of human trafficking, all of these kinds of issues that we don't want to talk to our young children about. You know, but things like Chicago make it crystal clear that we have to have a conversation with our children about what's taking place in our community. My fourth book is actually going to be around grief. And in this book, this young boy loses his best friend because he got shot and killed the night before. They're both 9 years old. And people were said to me when I told them about the book, Kenny, isn't that too young of a conversation to have with a 9-year-old? And my answer to them, no, especially when you look at what's taking place in Chicago, where there has actually been 2 9-year-olds
right.
in the last 12 months that were murdered.
Exactly. You got 9-year-olds actually living that experience.
Absolutely. So if you don't have it then, when are you going to have it?
Exactly. Kenny, before we run out of time, considering this is 2016, almost 5% of the 3,500 children books that are published each year don't have that many black characters?
Absolutely, and the number is even more dismal when you look at the actual makeup of the authors themselves, because
okay.
the authors of black character-led books are white women, and so they're not even told through our narrative. And so
okay.
we have to begin, as authors begin, I think one of the things that people, particularly us who are authors, we just don't see any money in children's books.
Mm-hmm.
Not the
mm-hmm.
kind of that you get in the urban fiction and all some of that other stuff. You actually have to be in my kind of space where I actually want to do something good with children in order to make a difference and don't have the nuance of wanting to make a lot of money from it to actually write children's books, and I'm okay with that. But we do have to encourage more people of color to write children's narratives so that they can see things through our lens. I mean, you look at this book, The Happy President or The Happy Slaves or the Happy Birthday, Mr. Washington. I think that's a perfect example why people of color have to write books about people of color. Because when you have two people sit down at a table, write down, picture this, you have two people sit down at the table and they say, oh, let's write a book. And then one of them says, let's write a book about George Washington. And then the other one says, well, let's write the book about the slaves making him a cake. And we're going to talk about how happy they are, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That happens in a narrative because there's no one black sitting at the table saying, yo, that's crazy. You can't write that book.
Exactly.
You can't, and there's no way that you can explain that. There's no way that you can explain that out. But the only way that you counter narrative is that you counter narrative. And so they can write all the crazy things they want to write, but we got to continue to overflood that stuff with the reality of who we are culturally in this country, what we've accomplished, and who we are as a people. And we just have to do more of that. And I'm hoping that at least my works and the things that I'm trying to do with these books contribute to that.
Final question, Kenny. Where do you see yourself 5 years from now as an author and also with Fathers Incorporated?
Well, I'm going to tell you, as an author, I have a goal for myself, and that is to have completed and published 10 children books in the next 4 years. And so my goal is to drop a book every 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
And so I really want to create a series of books that allow us to really change the narrative for our kids at an early age around who we are as a people in this country and how valuable they are as children and how their voices should be heard. But with respect to Fathers Incorporated, you know, we just want to find ourselves in a space where we are creating more products that's culturally sensitive, that has cultural perspective through documentaries, through books, through curriculums, through trainings, through whatever medium that we have to create so that there is a better library of narrative for schools to use, Head Starts to use, church groups, Sunday schools can use, those kinds of things. And really begin to be an agency that is not only the producer of those kinds of products, but the distributor of those kinds of products.
Kenny Braswell, Executive Director of Fathers Incorporated and author of Daddy, There's a Noise Outside. If you have questions, comments, or suggestions as to future In Black America programs, email us at jhanson@kut.org. Also, let us know what radio station you heard us over. Remember to like us on Facebook and to follow us on Twitter. The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of this station or of the University of Texas at Austin. You can hear previous programs online at kut.org. Until we have the opportunity again for technical producer David Alvarez, I'm Johnny O'Hanson Jr. Thank you for joining us today. Please join us again next week.
CD copies of this program are available and may be purchased by writing In Black America CDs, KUT Radio, 300 West Dean Keaton Boulevard, Austin, Texas, 78712. That's In Black America CDs, KUT Radio, 300 West Dean Keaton Boulevard, Austin, Texas, 78712. This has been a production of KUT Radio.